I'll just say. We ready? Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody here this evening and this beautiful evening to the Committee of the Whole meeting for the Eastern Lancaster County School Board for the month of May. At this time, one of our board members, Jackie Geyer, will not be able to be with us tonight due to a personal issue, I believe, or a family issue, something like that. So at this time, if you please rise and join me in a moment of silence, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time, we have reserved for citizen comments. We received two cards. Are there any more cards out there from anybody that would like to address more?
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll start with Rosanna Martin. If you please come, you can pull your mask down to speak into the microphone so we can hear you clearly. State your name again and your address.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Rosanna Martin. We live at 985 Sunset Avenue, New Holland, PA. We have three children who attend Garden Spot now and one child who graduated last year. I am speaking in regards to graduation. I understand that last year's graduation, you guys did the best you could in the situation that we had. But it does still make me sad that our son got to miss out on such a, you know, such a special event. Anyway, so now our second son is graduating, and I did receive an email from the school saying that due to the restrictions lifted, that we can have a normal graduation with normal attendance. Prior to that email, I was making phone calls, I was emailing all kinds of events, all kinds of parks to see, like, to have information to give you guys tonight, but obviously now that's not necessary. So I just want to make sure that that is still the plan, to have a normal graduation with normal attendance, because my son keeps saying, Mom, I just want our whole class to be together. So that's what I got. Thank you.
We'll be voting on it tonight, so.
Yep, that's what I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Next person we have is Daryl Martin. Same thing, pull your mask down, state your name and address.
Hello, I'm Daryl Martin. I live on 117 North Hill Road in Terry Hill. I'd just like to take a moment to read two scriptures. If you need wisdom, ask our generous God and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking. For the Lord grants wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. And if I may, I'd like to pray for you. Lord, we thank you that you are God and that you do have the wisdom that we need each day. You give us the grace and the wisdom to walk through the things that we face, the decisions that we need to make, the discussions we have, and the relationships we have. And so, Lord, I pray for this board. I pray for each person here. I pray that you would give them the wisdom they need to make the decisions that are best for this community, best for this school, in all aspects. Lord, they're in some difficult situations from time to time, and we just ask that supernaturally you would give them the thoughts and the ideas that they need to just make this experience, these high school years for the teens in our area to be a safe one and to be good. Good part of their lives, things they'll remember for the rest of their lives. Thank you for this board and the efforts and the time they put in. Pray that you would bless them for that. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. And the last card we have is for Beth Sharp. You know the routine, so.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. I tried to prepare comments for several weeks now, but everything kept changing, kind of like for all of you. So I, too, am here to speak about graduation, and similar to Rosie, was just trying to help. I'm sure it was kind of annoying, but help find ways to just make this happen for the students this year. I have to say it's been quite a thrill to just have some normalcy. The kids were able to enjoy a prom. It was really fun to be at the lacrosse game the other night and see the kids cheering their other fellow students on and just have some excitement in the stands. So just want to thank you for all that you've done to make things possible this year. As far as graduation, there was a survey. I'm sure all of you are aware of that. And so I was kind of curious to hear the results of that. I don't know if that may be a moot point at this time. I know that some of the options were outdoors, but possibly no makeup or rain date. So one thing I was hoping is that if it is outdoors, especially with restrictions being lifted, that we would be able to make other accommodations. Additionally, if there are still restrictions and we do have to make concessions, I know it would mean a lot to the students to be able to graduate together. There was one option on the survey to have two separate graduations so that everyone could see their child graduate, which I very much appreciated. I was just wondering if there is, in fact, a restriction or something that has to limit attendance, if we can consider having all the graduates together and maybe just rotate the parents so that maybe the graduates could be together in the gym, and then maybe A through L comes in through the tennis court doors and goes out the stadium, and then M through Z comes in and goes out so that all the students can stay together, because I know that was very important to them. I'm hoping none of these points have to factor in, but I just wanted to share those thoughts. And lastly, I just want to thank you for everything this year. It has not been a year that any of us have wanted, and I don't envy your position, but I really appreciate all that you've done to make things happen this year. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank you and all the other parents that have made suggestions. You know, just we can't think of everything, so I always say, just because somebody might have a better idea out there, and I greatly appreciate any suggestions that you and other parents and any topic have sent to the school board to expand our knowledge of something. You know, it's greatly appreciated. I know I speak for the rest of the board in that, so thank you.
Thank you. I think we all have the kids in mind, so I think we all have the same goal. Thank you.
All right, moving on to the personnel report. Nadine.
Yes, we have a longer personnel report than we've had in the recent meetings. That's because we have some new candidates for teaching positions here this evening. I'd like to introduce two of them, or actually two, and then one who's been with us for a while, and then Mrs. Martin will introduce another one. Okay, so the first one is Jenna Ioannidis, and I told her she just had to stand right now. I think Mr. Ramsey told her she had to give a 10-minute speech, but she just needs to stand right now. She is a graduate of Millersville in 2017 with a bachelor's degree in early childhood ed with a STEM endorsement. She's substituted at various school districts around the county, and she's going to bring that experience to Eastern Lancaster County, New Holland Elementary, as a kindergarten teacher. Our other person here this evening is Robert Louis Soper. He can stand as well. He has some big shoes to fill, but he is really going to be able to fill those. He's been teaching since 2014. He has his bachelor's degree in middle school education, math and science, and a master's in educational technology. He's level one and level two Google certified, so he's going to challenge Mr. Guyman, who is going to be his mentor. He's also certified in digital tools like Flipgrid and ePuzzles, and he has presented at ISTE. I can't remember what ISTE stands for, but it's that geeky conference with, I know, that all our computer and STEM and all those geeks want to go to. So we're very, very excited to have Louis join us here at Elanco. And I will go one more with Mr. Tim Mall. As you all know, we hired him as the assistant principal at Brecknock Elementary the beginning of the year. And with Kim leaving to move on to Twin Valley as the curriculum specialist there, director of curriculum there, we interviewed, and Mr. Mall came to the top of the interviewees, and we are moving him to the principal position at Brecknock. And Mrs. Martin?
Good evening. my pleasure to introduce to you.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Kimber Rutt. Kimber is, it's a long time coming, right, Kimber? Kimber has been with us for a number of years. She served as a personal care assistant in autistic support classrooms for several years through our STS, and then went on to get her certification and has served as midterm substitute and long-term substitute at New Holland Elementary and Brecknock Elementary. She also recently completed her special education certification, and so she is going to be hired as one of our special education teachers serving at the high school in autistic support.
Well, I know some of you were warned that Mr. Wenzel might ask a question, so these are good questions. I will start with Jenna. Where did you attend high school, and what hobbies do you have?
Just for the online people.
I attended Hempfield High School, and was the other one, what, hobbies?
Yeah, if you have any hobbies, pets or anything like that.
I love photography, so that's something that I'm very passionate about as well, okay. As well as teaching.
Okay, thank you. Might as well pass it to Robert here. Robert, same routine. Where did you grow up, and what hobbies or pets do you have?
I grew up right here in Lancaster. We moved here when I was 12. I graduated from Lancaster Catholic. Some hobbies. I've lived in Philly for a couple of years. I just love exploring the city, walking. I lost 70 pounds this year walking, so it's been an adventure. Yeah.
And Kimber, I guess. No, she's been with a while. I don't remember torturing her the last time. I knew we had her the first time.
So I'm originally from Corning, New York. Met my husband playing volleyball, so that's a hobby of mine. And just follow my children around now playing all their sports.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all for being good sports. And do I have a motion to approve the personnel report?
Moved.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's been properly moved and second. Any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Congratulations.
Congratulations, everyone. I'm really happy for you. Thrilled to bring you onto the team. Tim, you're obviously being elevated. I tell this to everyone, print out the minutes. This begins your scrapbook for your professional career, and I mean that seriously. It's an important night for you to join our team, for some of you starting your careers after working for us for so long. I think that's a great story. So congratulations to all of you.
All right. Moving on to property and services, Mr. Ramsey.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We have three action items for next Monday night. The first action item, this happens every year in May. This is where we appoint or approve our district depositories. They will remain the same as they have in previous years with PNC Bank and the Pennsylvania School District Liquid Asset Fund. So those will remain the same. There's no changes there and in costs, fees, or anything like that. The next action item for next Monday is the breakfast, lunch, and milk prices effective for next year. The state and the government did approve one more year of free lunches, so they're extending that into and to the end of 21-22. However, we still need to set the prices. You'll notice on the attachment that there's no change. They remain the same as what they currently are in 2020. This current school year, 2021. So no change. And again, they have extended the free lunches for everybody through the end of next year. Okay. The next action item for next week is the adoption or approval of the resolution authorizing the proposed final budget display and advertising. You'll see the actual resolution. You'll also see the final budget notice. Technically, this only requires us to put the budget on display and advertise in the newspaper that it is on display and that it will be considered a final budget at our June board meeting. It can change between the proposed final and also the final adoption in June. I will call your attention, and I'll have Mr. Ely bring up the third attachment. Everybody has a copy at their desk of the presentation. In order for me to prepare the PD 2028, the proposed final that will be put on display for next after adoption next Monday, I did want to give you a little budget update, and at the very end we can kind of talk through potential tax increase. What you'll see, this is going to be an update on the ESSER funds, and it's also going to be an update on the budget since we've last previewed it, I think it was in April. See if I can get this to work. I guess I got to turn it on. That'll work. Okay. Oh. Jeez. Touchy. What I'd like to do is kind of take you back to, if you recall, the previous recession, and you'll see some similarities from the current recession and the previous recession. This is the one that occurred back in 2009 to 2011. If you recall, for those board members that were here, we were given federal stimulus in order to help with the reduction in revenues and the increased costs. You'll see in this chart, the blue is our basic education state funding, and the red is the stimulus funding. And you'll see it's like a bell-shaped curve where we had an influx of money, and then we basically reverted back in 11-12 based on the same state funding we had in 8-9. You'll see some differences in this new stimulus when I get to it. We're fortunate this year that the state has not decreased their funding level. They, in essence, have kept it flat, and the federal stimulus is actually was layered on top of that. The three ESSERs that I'm talking about is ESSER 1, 2, and 3, and then you'll see that they've kind of overlaid them to expire at the end of the subsequent year of the year following. So when you take a look at ESSER 1, and I did have the allocations at the bottom there, ESSER 1 is the smallest. That is just under $687,000. That grant period ends. We have to spend that until September of 2022. Where you see the arrows right here, that means September in each of these years. So we basically have 21, 22, and up to September to spend those. Our plan, as we've worked through it, we'll spend them, the majority of them this year, and we'll have a little bit of balance next year. ESSER 2, we have until September of 2023 to spend that one, and you'll see down below that that amount is just over $2.8 million. And then ESSER 3 is our largest, the most recent one. We have until September of 2024 to spend that one, and that came in at just under $5.7 million. So all of them together, we're at just under $9.2 million. But I do call your attention, if you can see it underneath the little stuff on the screen there, of the ESSER 3, we are required to spend at least 20% on learning loss. And I'll get a little bit more detail on that later. But that amounts to about $1.1 million of that $5.7 million that we have to spend on learning loss. And again, we have until September of 24 to spend those funds. This is the chart, very similar to the one that we saw previously. When you look at the funding, it's pretty much flat. And then we have the federal dollars layered in over. It's very similar to the funding that we saw in the previous recession, where you have that bell-shaped curve. So basically, the funding's going to increase, and then it's going to go away. But when we're all said and done, we're going to be at the same level that we were prior to the recession. So we have to really be mindful on how we spend these dollars. I wanted to provide a history of the tax increase versus the Act 1 index. You'll see that in the blue line, that's the Act 1 index over time. This is the projected Act 1 index based on the independent fiscal office projections. And then the red is the actual tax increases that we've had since 2008-09. I will call your attention, as you'll see, here was the recession period previously, where the Act 1 index went down, and we saw tax increases that were above the Act 1 index. We were able to take advantage of two of the exceptions. One was the special ed cost increases and the PISRS increase. You'll see later, I'll reference back to this when I get to the PISRS chart. You'll see that we had the opportunity, because the costs in PISRS spiked so much during that time, that we were able to take advantage of the exceptions, which now that it's kind of still going up, but gradually, we don't have that exception like we had back in the previous. But you'll see we, since 14-15, we were at the index each of those 3 years, and then we've been coming down. And then this current year, we had a 0% tax increase. Now the question that we'll have to talk about tonight is, where do we want to come in for 21-22? The index, as you know, it is 3%. So we can talk about that once we get through the numbers. I do want to share some slides that I received from PASBO. PASBO is our state organization for school business officials. This was actually presented to all school districts in the state of PA during their most recent conference, which happened at the beginning of March. The first several slides really deal with ESSER and the available uses of those funds. There's a total of 18 total eligible uses, and they range from a myriad of things, more specific, more general. So I'll go through them, but I'm not going to go through them in detail, just kind of give you a brief overview of what they are and what we can use them for. If you look at the first one really is pretty broad. It's telling us that we can use it anything authorized by Elementary and Secondary Education Act, that's the ESEA, and also underneath that we can use anything with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, that's IDEA and special ed. When you look at letter E, they're talking about the coordination of efforts with state public health departments to prevent, prepare for, and respond to COVID-19. When you get to some of the other eligible uses, you'll see in G, it's also talking about preparedness and response efforts for local education agencies. H, you're looking at training on sanitation and minimizing the spread of COVID. I, you're looking at purchasing supplies to sanitize and clean the buildings. J, this is planning for, coordinating, and implementing activities during long-term closures that, you know, would it be education online, it'd be virtual, it'd be laptops, those types of things. Continuing to K, here's the purchase of technology. L is providing mental health services and supports. N is addressing learning loss, and that is the 20% that we talked about, and I have a slide on that as well. And then on the last page of eligible uses, under O, this is for school facility repairs and improvements to help with P, which will be in projects to improve the indoor air quality in school facilities. And I have the last one highlighted because I really do want to talk about this one. Really, when you look at this one, this is encompasses everything. This is other activities that are necessary to maintain the operation of and continuity of services in local education agencies and continuing to employ existing staff of the local education agency. That pretty much says we can do it, use it for anything we want to. And then underneath, if you can see at the bottom here, the kicker in all this, typically with federal funds, we're not able to, we have to supplement, we can't supplant. With these funds, we can supplant all we want. The reason I say that is because of the uniform grant guidance. This is the federal regulations that we are required to follow when we purchase things. We have to follow the federal regulations when we purchase things which have lower thresholds than what we normally would do through our state CoSTARS program, our state bidding limits. In addition, if we do any projects, we really have to go by the Bacon-Davis Act, not the prevailing wage. So there's a whole new layer of requirements and bidding and those types of things. What we would like to propose is being able to utilize these funds for existing staff because we can. What'll happen is it'll free up dollars that'll fall to the bottom line, but then we can commit those to the other purposes that are in the eligible uses. whether it be cyber charter schools, whether it be for the increase, whether it be purchasing the sanitation. So we're going to do everything that they're asking us to do. Could be our certain some of our projects that we're looking at. Basically, this will allow us to earmark funds, commit them for other purposes to help alleviate some of those regulations and purchasing that we need to do. And this is what a lot of the districts are looking to do. I've had calls and conversations with other business managers, and we just feel that this is the easiest way to spend it, and then being able to free up money to do everything else in those eligible uses without having to go through the red tape of all the procurement process. What I would share with the board is you're going to see some larger, some fund balances that we will commit to future years. It won't fall into our unassigned, but we just wanted to kind of warn you that as we go through this and we share how we're using it, you'll be able to see those additional funds.
Essentially, Mr. Ramsey found a mechanism in the text that allowed us to detach the money from all the requirements, the federal requirements, which frees us up to use the funds the way we really want to use them and not in the way they're trying to force us to use them, and with all the caveats that come along with federal spending. So essentially, we've detached the money, we're going to move it over, and we can use it the way we need to use it. But because we're going to have all that extra money all in one year, we're going to see fall through at the end of the year, and that's why we're telling you ahead of time that money will be there because of the way we're going to use it. The calls that Mr. Ramsey's getting are not him getting information. It's him giving information to other school districts on how we're doing it. Let's be real specific and direct about that. He's not calling out. He's getting calls in. I've heard some of those calls myself. So I think we have a pretty smart way to go forward, or Keith is recommending a smart way to use the funds over a period of time that keep us from being hamstrung by federal requirements.
In addition, by doing it this way as well, it will help us minimize or reduce our cost per student for cyber charter schools. And so that'll help with some of that back-end cost as well.
It actually reduces the amount we have to pay per child because of the way he's doing this, because of the way we're identifying the funds.
The last slide I had is the learning loss requirement. What you'll see in this one pretty much, and I know that I've already discussed it with Dr. Larkin, but really what they want to do is they want us to at least use 20% of the funds for learning loss for the students. This you'll see is items, it's not all encompassing, but it would be summer learning or summer enrichment, extended day, comprehensive after-school programs or extended day school year programs. You can also use it for assessment programs, those types of things. So Dr. Larkin and I will work through and try with her team and try to figure out how we spend that. But that's the 20%, which again is about $1.1 million. And then the last slide I have is kind of some recommendations from PASBO. And you'll see what their recommendation is trying not for districts to really relive the past, if you will, but to really learn from the past and be able to use these funds in a prudent, specific way to help getting through this economy and through some of these budget challenges. The first thing that they recommend is to offset general fund expenses so that you can have a buffer for future when the ESSER funds expire. Very similar to what we're looking to do. They also recommend that you don't forgo property tax increases if you actually need them, if you didn't have the federal stimulus. So if you look at, and what I've done is I haven't built any federal stimulus money in, any of the ESSER money. What we'll do is we'll look at it without the ESSER, decide on what tax increase we would like to see, and then we'll do the proposed final, and then I'll put the ESSER money in to the final budget when we're done. So, and they're also saying, if you look at the third bullet, use 1 and 2 to build fund balance for the cliff year. That's what we're looking to do. You only have the capacity the Act 1 index gives you to raise additional local revenues. As I shared, a lot of those exceptions have gone away, so we're kind of capped at that Act 1 exception, and for next year it's 3%. Advanced purchases, you know, if we can buy some things like textbooks or software, or if we can buy technology, and then look at return on investment projects to lower future expenses. So if you take a look at that, that's kind of PASBO's recommendation to all the districts. Any questions on any of the ESSER stuff right now? I know it was a lot, and I went through it pretty quickly, but I wanted to kind of get through that and get to some of the other items. I just wanted to give some data to put it in perspective, kind of historically. Dr. Hollister, when he had his press conference, had some of these slides that he was able to, if he was able to, he was going to utilize some of them. First one is the PISA's rates. And what you can see is how the PISA's rates over time, and you see how they dipped right here in 2001-2, actually went down to like 1%. And you saw this slide before, but I did want to share this 300,000 was the net amount. That was the net cost to the school district. 600,000 gross expense, 300,000 reimbursement from the state, $300,000 net. This is the spike I was telling you about when we talked about the tax increases and being able to utilize that at PISA's exception. We don't have much of that going forward. What you'll see here is at 34.94% rate, with our 21-22 budget, the net is $4.2 million. Our costs since 2001, so basically 20 years, went from $300,000 to $4.2, almost a $4 million increase. Just to put it in perspective, one mil of tax is $2.7 million. So that's about a mil and a half of taxes that we had to put in place to cover the PISA's. Now, one of the things that the board did and we continue to do is we were proactive and we continue to have a fund balance committed just for PISA's that we can help absorb those increases in hope that it stabilizes in the long term. So, again, very good forethought with the board and administration to really put that money in place. Special education cost versus revenue. The blue line you'll see is the cost of special education over the years. You'll see this dip here. This was the shutdown. So our costs actually went down. And you'll see our state revenue is in the red. That has been pretty much flat over the years. Even though they have that new funding formula for any new money, we still don't get a whole lot of money really to make a difference. Our deficit in 21-22 is projected to grow to $6.7 million. So our costs are $6.7 million more than our revenue. And that continues to be a big sticking point when you talk about mandated costs. Now, if you keep in mind, we have done things to help minimize this difference. If you recall, for many years we've been educating students from other districts. We bring in about $2.2 million a year with that. That's the gross revenue that helps to offset our class costs. So kudos to Dr. Larkin, who initiated it, and then Kara Martin, who has kind of continued that. Definitely a program that other districts want to send their students to, which is great. Charter school costs. You can kind of see how this happened over time from the inception all the way up to where we are in projecting for next year. You'll see right here is where we started our Elanco EOL, Elanco Virtual Academy program, Elanco Online. You can see that since its inception, we saw some decreases, some increases, more decreases, but you can see from 1920 that helped us contain the cost increases for the cyber school costs. Even though our amount per student went up, our total number of kids didn't, and therefore we were able to maintain with that Elanco online program. Unfortunately, with the shutdown of schools, we saw a huge increase from 1920 to 2021, up about 47 students, and its total cost about $1.9 million. Our budget for 2021 is about $1.1 million. Our cost increase went up $800,000. You'll see in our budget, our hopes is that we'll at least get half of those increases back, half of those number of students back that increased, back to our schools next year. We put in the budget $400,000. So we still have that additional $400,000 gap, but we're hoping that half of those students will come back next year and we'll be at the 1.5 million instead of the 1.9.
Just a footnote and commentary on cyber charter schools. You know, it's a pet peeve, and I continue to bring it up when the opportunity is correct. Did a press conference, was asked to do a press conference last week and include some of this, so this information is fresh on my mind. $73 million is the total that school districts in this county alone paid out in the last 3 years. $73 million left this county and is gone forever to owners and operators of, quote, nonprofit cyber charter schools. Now, could Lancaster County use $73 million? I'm thinking we probably could. So it's an issue that we need to continue to pound away on the General Assembly on, and I am. I had a conversation with Senator Amit, and Representative Zimmerman also asked for a conversation this summer. So we'll continue to talk about it.
So I just went through when you talk about state mandates, those are the three highest cost drivers for districts. As I presented at the meeting in April, or March or April, the last budget meeting, we really, these are the items that are, quote, COVID-related budget items. What we're looking to do is we're hoping to weather the storm and hopefully get back to some type of normalcy, hopefully. So for one more year, we would like to propose using about $1.2 million of the committed fund balance based on savings that we've had this year, and some of the revenues came in higher than anticipated, but we would like to commit. We're estimating to be about $1.3 million left over on top of some of the normal fall through. But these are the items that, again, the EOL stipends, the EOL contracted cost, that's about $400,000. It's good because we are not sending students to cyber charter schools, which would be far greater. But they have gone up. I know Dr. Larkin has worked with Mr. McCaskey and his team to look at some of the EOL stipends and how we can and working with Dr. Sanger on how we can modify some of the scheduling to help minimize some of those stipends. And on the revenue side, our earned income tax is popping up, which is good, but we still have it budgeted below the level that about $100,000 below pre-COVID. Our interest income still stays the same. I don't anticipate that coming back next year, maybe not even into the following year. They're really trying to keep that pretty steady, and as you know, as the more the federal government goes into debt, if you do anything with interest rates, that really impacts their interest expense as well. And the basic ed funding, as I shared, that's been flatlined. Hopefully after this year, there'll be hopefully some additional funds in future years. But again, these are things that we're hoping will come around in 22-23. That's why we're recommending that we use $1.2 million of the fund balance. If they don't, then we'll have another discussion the following year. But again, just so you know, this cyber school increase is only half of what our current cost is this year, okay?
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
For the revenues, I see it says, you know, below pre-COVID levels. What were the pre-COVID levels, like, for the earned income or the interest? Like,
The pre-COVID levels for, like, earned income tax were just under $4 million. They were, like, 3.9. I budgeted 3.8.
Okay.
Interest income was $250,000. I'm budgeting $50,000, and I'm not sure we're going to even make that this year. And the basic ed funding, that one's a hard one, but I know it was in the $4 million.
Okay.
So it's not, still getting a large sum of money. Last thing I wanted to share just from the budget side before we get into the discussion, you'll see that our 2021 budget and our 21-22 budget, you'll see the 3.3 funding gap in total. We're recommending you use PESRs, that committed fund balance of about $745,000. And then our funding gap, which I just went over, the $1,260,000, this is where I'm recommending that we use the the committed funds for COVID-related items, which brings us down to an adjusted funding gap of $1.3 million. If you recall, last year, we had a zero funding gap with a zero tax increase. And if you recall, we did make some cuts in some staffing and those types of things, which we did have to, unfortunately, add back this year. But there was some cuts this year. And then what I have a question mark here because we really need to talk about what the board potentially would like to do or what they would like me to put in the proposed final budget. And in order to do that, I kind of gave some series of options, 1.5, 2, 2.5, and 3. It'll show you in this column what the potential yield is from the tax increase, what the use of fund balance would be. Those two together equal to $1,358,000, and then what the actual cost would be to the average taxpayer, and the average taxpayer is just under $193,000 is the average residential assessment. And then basically, if, just to look at it this way, with when you look at the tax increase, it's basically $12 for every half a percent. So if you said 1%, it would be $24 and so on. So I gave that range so that we could have a discussion on what you're thinking from a tax increase perspective. And then basically that will help me then develop the proposed final that we can adopt on Monday so I can put that on display. And again, keep in mind, it can change from proposed to final, up or down. Any questions or comments or thoughts?
Any comments?
Yes, Mr. President.
Yes, go ahead, Paul.
I think this year we should look at having a tax increase of around 2.5%. That would be my suggestion.
I was talking to Keith a little bit beforehand. I had said 3, but I could live with 2.5. Mainly because there's some expenses that will be coming up at our elementary schools and some things down the road that we don't want to have our backs against the wall a little bit, and we can start building toward that. Any other comments?
Mr. Ramsey, the federal stimulus money, you're proposing that 1.3, I'm sorry, I lost the number, that $1.2 million of the federal stimulus get used to fill a portion of the proposed gap. What is that, did I understand that correctly?
No, that was my apology. No, that is separate from the actual ESSER, the federal stimulus. When I did my last presentation, mm-hmm. that was when I referenced that 1.3, and I should have put it on here, I apologize, but that had to do a lot with the revenues that were coming in higher than anticipated in regards to our real estate transfer tax, our earned income tax. Those actually came in better than anticipated because right. we had some huge reductions. So because they came in better, I feel just operationally we're going to have that money that we can use without using the ESSER funds.
I see. Okay.
Looking at the ESSER funds, potentially, like with some of our upcoming projects and those types of things that we're looking to do with, you know, Blue Ball, New Holland, some of the stuff we potentially would have done here at the high school with some of the HVAC, the chillers, being able to utilize some of that to help fund for future projects. I hope that answered your question.
Right. So you were proposing earlier that the $9 million in ESSER funds gets utilized mostly towards staff and staff retention because it's one of the easier ways to document use, and as such, other revenues then could be used towards other asset or other aspects of what's allowable or necessary even for continued operations under those federal guidelines, right?
Yes, correct.
So would there be some consideration for not using all $9 million towards the staff, or seven point eight million after the 20% reduction there.
What would you? I mean, what are you proposing to use? Well, I mean, I guess the question is, we're going to have costs that are going to increase based on the budget.
Right.
So there's things we're going to have to do. We're going to have to, you know, continue to purchase.
So similar a lot of the SBA monies, which is, this is not the same. I understand. I know
that. Right.
But what a lot of organizations have done is utilize shortfalls in their budgets or utilize those funds to cover things like payroll, mm-hmm. so that those dollars could go towards shortfalls in their budget instead of funding potentially future projects. So, like, for example, if a portion of that funded the budget shortfall, because we're assuming we'll have the excess funds that could be in our revenue now, or left net to the revenue, because we're utilizing these funds for things like payroll and keeping staff, as you suggested. So a portion of that potentially could be used to fund this shortage, as opposed to going to the capital fund or being earmarked, so to speak, for future projects.
You can definitely do that. The concern that I would have, and I would caution the board against, is where will you be when this money goes away? That's my only concern. I mean, that's the concern that I think a lot of the people are really working towards or thinking about. You know, we infuse, like, just say, for example, you have the hey, we want to use half of the funding gap with the ESSER, just say, I'm just putting a number there. You know, that's about, you know, $650,000, $700,000. The question is, if nothing changes down the road, if we continue to do that potentially, or we look at it, the question is, where will we find ourselves when all the money goes away and we have this gap? Will we be able to fund it through a tax increase or through our normal revenue increments or expenditure reductions, or are we going to have to tax to the max and then also make major cuts like we did back in 9-10? I think we furloughed like 17 people. Now we've been able to bring them back, mm-hmm. but I'm just saying, it just, I can do whatever the board wishes. Sure. I just would caution you against doing too much of that with one-time money, and then where do we end up when we get through that funding mechanism?
Sure. Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah.
Obviously. I was just asking, because I think mm-hmm. that there might be the potential here to do less than three or less than 2.5, right. and rely on some of these funds. I would not suggest zero by any means.
But, right. So in essence, what you're looking at is, you're basically saying, like, say we do 2%, you would say the tax increase would be 683. We would use 674 of those funds.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Or some portion of either right. those funds and the fund balance.
Correct.
You know, I mean, it all nets
exactly.
at some point to the from
exactly.
the same place. But yeah.
Right.
And just keep in mind, I mean, I don't want to overplay this, but there was a zero last year. So if you would go 2%, you're essentially charging our taxpayers about $24 increase each of the last 2 years, which is not huge dollars. And so I think we're continuing to be real tight with our budget. And as we saw, having some real good academic success with our U.S. News and World Report outing last week. So, again, we're watching the dollars closely. I think, and I like what the board's saying,
yes.
you know, somewhere between 2-2.5% is where we ought to try to come in, if that's the direction we're getting from the board.
Yeah, we were kind of thinking the same thing as you are, Brian, with, you know, where we did the range from 1.5 to 3, just to see where we are.
Right.
Again, as we know, depending on what happens, that 843 in fund balance, if it's a 1.5, or right. the 500,000, if it's 2.5, you know, we'll just have to really be mindful. And again, as you know, with us, we don't just spend to spend. We basically make sure we're spending prudently and everything else. So our goal would be to try to find that money and save it, But yeah, definitely understand your thinking. Not a problem at all. I think it's something that you definitely need to think about when you're getting $9 million. So just wanted to, like I said, just wanted to caution down the road. But
and I agree with Brian. I just, you know, this money falls off, the federal money falls off 24, 25, correct?
September of 24, correct.
And where does our, doesn't our debt service end in a couple of years? Like, where's that at?
Right now, our debt service is, for next year's budget, if half of it falls off. So we basically have, so the net, the realized savings is about $1.3 million. So our debt service reduced $1.3 million, and I put a budgetary reserve, I put a transfer to capital projects of $1.3 million for 21-22. 22-23, our debt completely falls off. So there'll be $2.6 million that'll fall to the bottom line that we could then push over as well to help fund those projects that we have coming up down the pike. Now, mm-hmm. One of the things we're going to do in June is revisit that capital project plan with you, and we can discuss all of that at our June sure. committee meeting as well.
I guess, figuring that conversation into what Brian's saying to kind of let us get to that point in 2 years with as minimal increase as we can get, and I'm not in favor of doing zero, obviously, when I hear 2.5-3% with, that just seems high to me, but that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would be in favor of doing 2%. I could be convinced to do 2.5%, but I think that utilizing some of the anticipated money makes sense in my mind.
All right. Well, like I said, I think what we'll do is we'll fine tune. We'll look at revenues and see. We'll try and land between two and two and a half, if that's the will of the board.
Yeah.
I'm seeing some head shakes. Yeah, we don't need to take
fine.
A vote.
On my part,
that'd
be fine.
Do you need a vote tonight?
No. No. I just needed something to plug in. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll go around to 2%, like you guys and Dr. Collar said, and then we can revisit again in June. Before we do final adoption and set the millage rate in at the June board meetings, especially when we have updated numbers on the facility study.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Ansley. Well done on the preparation.
Yes.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
No, it's just worth noting. I mean, I know you guys appreciate Mr. Ramsey and his staff, but we're having a much easier conversation tonight than a lot of other school districts are across the Commonwealth and across the country. We're able to plan ahead, which is a real nice luxury. Others are just planning to survive. So, again, it's the frugality of the board over a long period of time. And I look at Tom, Mr. Wenzel's been here longest. not rubbing that in, Tom, I'm just saying. But you know, it takes years and multiple boards to make that happen and the administration. So thank you, and thanks, Mr. Ramsey.
And looking where we originally, we're looking at a few months ago what it was. It was pretty ugly at that time. So it's a little more optimistic right now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's all I had on that piece. So we'll have everything ready for next week. And I do have an information item, if you don't mind going back to that. We did get the numbers from the county. And we did get the information from the state on our funding. You need to go down the other way. I'm up above there. Yeah, go up. There you go, right there. Information. Yep. Yep. And if you can open that attachment. Wanted to kind of give the board a history of where we were since the inception, pretty much, of the Homestead Farmstead. We've peaked in the beginning at about $68 per Homestead Farmstead. And we are estimated about for 21-22, we're estimating about just over $64. I think I can see that, right? Yeah, 64.60. Yeah. Oh, I should look over here. 64.63 estimated based on the allocation of $446,545. And there's our total number of properties. Keep in mind that the Homestead and the Farmstead If an individual has a homestead and a farmstead, they get $129. Double. They get double, and then everybody else gets $64, no matter what your house is worth. So, and we'll actually set this at our June board meeting. I'll have more up-to-date information at our committee meeting in June, but wanted to give you guys an estimate. That's all I have.
Ask a quick question? So you're saying the number of homesteads went down for next year?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even with all the buildings that are going up?
Yeah, keep in mind they have to apply for this.
Yes. Oh, right. Okay.
Depending on whether we actually send out in December through the IU. The IU does it for the whole county. They send out the application for those homeowners that have not applied.
Got it.
And depending on if they sell their house.
Sure.
They may or may not re-enroll. Once you've enrolled in it, you never have to enroll again, as long as you own and live in the house.
So this isn't the number of properties in
Correct.
Eastern Lancaster
no.
County.
Correct.
It's just the number of people that applied for the
yep.
reduction.
These are the individuals that are owner-occupied, that qualify and have applied and been approved. Yep.
And there's a whole long story to how we arrived at that.
Oh, man, yeah.
But the
only district in the state?
The only district in the state not to accept it, and then it went to the voters.
Yep.
And remember the lofty expectations coming out of this by Governor Rendell, you know, how this was going to be an enormous savings to the taxpayers of Pennsylvania. Didn't work out that way. All right, any further comments? All right, thank you, Mr. Ramsey, for a fine presentation. Moving on to program.
Yes, Mr. Wentzel, I just have one action item, and that is the approval of an expulsion waiver, which you have access to review. If there's any questions about that, you can contact me. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Larkin.
Okay.
Management.
Thank you, Mr. Wentzel. The first item we have for action is just a minor adjustment to next year's school calendar. This came from a request of the association. This past year, the Monday after Easter was a snow makeup day. And what the association is requesting, and I support it, is to switch the snow makeup day to the Thursday prior to Easter, which would make the in-service day for teachers then on Monday. Basically what that does is it guarantees the Monday off after Easter and potentially makes Thursday a school day. There seemed to be consensus that folks would rather have the day off after Easter, after traveling, being with family, et cetera, than the Thursday prior to Easter. A minor change, I support it. If the board's okay with it, we'll make that an action item for next week. The next action item I have, again, for next week, we need to approve Mr. Johnson as the board secretary. That comes along every 4 years, and his term is up. So I know there's going to be great debate over that. But
can I amend it for 8 years?
We're hoping he can slip through. Likewise, Mr. Ramsey needs to be approved as the treasurer, and I believe that's a one-year appointment. Yeah, so that's every year we get to do that. And then finally, while we're on the election theme, board members, you have an obligation to complete your annual board election ballots for the IU board. Mr. Paul Irvin has graciously offered to step in and continue doing his duty there. The procedure for submitting those is all laid out for you there. If you have any questions, talk to the current board secretary, Mr. Johnson. And it looks like that's all happening right now. Moving along, next item I have is high school graduation. And I'll just take away all the suspense and say that we are planning to move that back indoors. I was hoping, and I had was sort of counting on the governor loosening up restrictions, and he has, in fact, done that in the nick of time. And so we are, as far as I understand, able to have a full ceremony in our gymnasium. And that would allow 6 tickets per family. And then there'll be a few extras that we can sort of argue for. Mr. Dr. Sanger gives a few extras out. Not all families will use all six, so we ask families to turn them in. And I don't believe all graduates will actually sit through the graduation because of a concern of COVID, and so there will be even probably a few more tickets available. We'll continue to live stream this into the auditorium, which quite frankly is the best seat in the house. It's sort of like going to a baseball game live. It's fun to catch the energy and get the excitement being in the room, but you get a better view in the auditorium, so to speak. Our tech guys, this is their World Series. They bring out all the tools and tricks, and they really do it great. They got boom cameras going and everything else. So the auditorium is open seating, and then we also stream that online. So that's my recommendation for graduation. I will say that prior to the governor's announcement, we had surveyed the learners and families, and there was an overwhelming majority that wanted it outside. But I think with these changes, this is the most appropriate and best venue. I was concerned about outside graduation for a whole host of reasons. I've been an administrator for 27 years, which means I've sat through 27 graduations. I've been wet. I've been chased by lightning. I've seen the wind blow everything off the stage, flags, podium, and flowers. I've seen people squinting in the sun. I've seen the heat, and I've seen kids dropping over because of the heat. So outside is just not the best venue. Certainly, we were giving that consideration because of the limited seating that we had, and that's what we were planning for. But the most overused and now never appreciated word of 2021, we're pivoting, and we're going to move from the outside to the inside. The outside would have required, I don't know that it would have been a nice venue anyway because of sound, sight lines, because we can't use a stadium. So I'm actually really excited to be able to move back to the gymnasium where we've had the last 12 commencements ever since I've been superintendent, actually before that, to the last 15 years. We've been in the gymnasium, and this year we'll be on our new floor, and no one will get shin splints from graduation. So that was for you, Mr. Conroy. I'm excited that we'll be able to keep that venue. It's a great venue. It's huge. We really chill it down. It works really well. We will spread out our learners. We may not do everything we always do. We may not have the band on site. We may have to use recorded music just to give us a little more room for the graduates on the floor. But the good news is we will have room for parents and a few family members. So we'll begin planning. We do need to order equipment for that immediately, which I will give Mr. Wooten the go-ahead later this evening to do that. Any questions?
Not that this affects me, since I'll be there anyway, but are board members invited to come to the graduation, like usual?
We'll have to look at our layout at this point. Tradition is board members are always given tickets, and we have you sit behind the graduates. We still need to ascertain how many faculty members are going to be interested in attending. So I would say pencil it in, but don't pen it in just yet. We'll let you know. Any other questions about graduation? I'm so thrilled. Quite honestly, I know the 531 is late in the school year, but it actually works well for us, as that's the last week of school. We can do assemblies, we can do award ceremonies, we can do a lot of things those last 4 days that we're going to be in jeopardy. I'm excited that it's going to look almost normal those last couple school days, kicking us off into the summer and hopefully into the next year. The masks are still going to be required. For attendees, as far as I understand, the master here to the end of the school year, but pretty much everything else is going to look pretty normal. Okay. Follow up from last meeting, I had indicated to the board I would share with you the information that we have regarding employers' ability to ask for employees' vaccine confirmations, et cetera. And so I'm just going to read directly from the report from the solicitor. The question is, can an employer ask employees if they've received the vaccine? The answer is yes. An employer can ask employees if they've received the vaccine. Additionally, an employer may ask an employee to provide proof that that employee has received the vaccine. The EEOC has clarified that such inquiries are not disability related because the employee's answer does not necessarily reveal the employee's medical condition. By way of example, if an employee answers that they have not received the vaccine, there are multiple reasons why they might not have received it, not just medical reasons. We recommend that if the employer requires employees to provide documentation showing that they have received the COVID-19 vaccine, that they instruct employees to provide only information regarding the vaccine, to the exclusion of the employee's other medical information. There are also legitimate business reasons to keep track of the numbers of employees who are vaccinated as a part of the employee's overall safety protocol, which is our number one concern. We do need to know which employees may or may not have COVID, especially if they're working with our most fragile earners. That was an ad lib on my part. This data, together with information about the risk of transmission by people who are vaccinated, can inform the employer's decisions about reopening or expanding the number of individuals at work, et cetera. Now, that's from our solicitor. We actually asked some clarifying questions in, and it's not from our solicitor, it's from our employee attorney, and he reaffirmed some of the pieces that we asked for more detail. As a follow-up, this communication comes from the association president, Mr. Jeff Martin, and he sent this out to all the employees. The employer does not violate HIPAA by simply tracking who has and who has not been vaccinated. Only insurance companies and medical providers are bound by HIPAA. And since your employer is not seeking information on a diagnosis a member might have, they are not asking for protected PHI, personal health information. So Elanco is well within their right to make this ask so they can plan accordingly for possible future staff absences and the like. So that comes from both our employment attorney, the association president, and I just happened to also see a lengthy article in the New York Times about the same information. So there is a promise I made to the board that would get you that information, and there it is. And I believe... Yeah, that concludes my management report. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Dr. Hollister? That or any other topics?
Yeah, I wanted to... First, thank you for that, Dr. Hollister. I know I emailed you about that, so I appreciate the information for sure. I wanted to talk briefly and ask, received an email... from you guys as collectively, Dr. Larkin specifically, I guess, in relation to BrainPop and some of the classroom information that was there that personally I see as an indoctrination of some sort of critical race theory that was there. And I had a few questions to clarify. When it comes to things like BrainPop or BrainPop Junior, which is the program that's there as a supplement from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong in terminology, to the regular school curriculum, is this something that would have needed to be approved? I think you had said in the email 7 years ago that it was kind of put out there as far as the first time. Would it have been something that needed to be approved by the district at that time?
No. It would not. I mean, we trust our teachers to find appropriate resources to supplement the curriculum. Now, the district controls the overall curriculum. But our teachers, especially now in a technology age, I mean, they can go out and grab all kinds of resources on a regular basis. And so we do have to put our faith and trust in our teachers that, you know, they understand and are mindful that, you know, to keep sort of the temperature in the middle. You know, we can't have ever our teachers pressing an ultra-conservative agenda. Likewise, they can't promote a hyper-liberal agenda. Public schools try to hit the ball, you know, down the middle of the fairway, so to speak.
So I'm glad you mentioned it that way. Does anybody, I guess, monitor any of the content that's on these type of sites so that it does not go one way or the other as what you're saying? Because these specific videos, and I watched many of them, I signed up for myself as a trial run as to BrainPop. I watched probably about a dozen videos myself, over which half of them were absolutely way liberal left agenda. 90% of the video would be concise, clear, correct to what historical information as apparent to this specific one that was titled Civil Rights. And this one specific in civil rights, if you haven't seen it, goes through about 4.5 minutes, like you had said in the email, You're completely correct. 4.5 minutes of accurate historical data information based on the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But then that last minute is extremely attacking the agenda that's out there on the left for certain when it comes to blacks are oppressed, that gays and transgenders are oppressed, that women are oppressed, that immigrants are oppressed. Specifically, in the end of this video, it says that from the video, while changing people's prejudices, that's something no law can fix. African Americans have continued to face violence and discrimination, but dedicated activists are keeping the world's attention on these issues. The legacy of the civil rights movement lives on in these generations and in other groups that have been inspired by the successes. Women, immigrants, gays and transgender people. These groups and others are still struggling to be treated with dignity, simply with dignity, whether it is fighting for equal pay, the freedom of life to live proudly and openly, or the right to live simply and be left in peace. If there is one thing we have learned from civil rights movement, it's that history is on their side. What concerned me was specifically when it had spoken about this being in the empathy and respect category. I found nothing in the empathy and respect category dealing with death, loneliness, depression, which would be way more specific to empathy and respect rather than conflict resolution, getting help, mindfulness, which was basically meditation, Harvey Milk specifically, his case, and parenthood, which I did find a little bit odd as well. So I guess my question is, you had said 7 years this has been in place. Who's watching what goes on this? Because whether I may agree with these specific things in empathy, do we know all of the hundreds of videos that are out there, and who's monitoring that administratively to make sure that we are not getting this, as an example, the critical race theory, but other things as well that could be indoctrinated in there?
Well, as I said before, there's a curriculum framework, and the teachers must operate within that framework. And we trust them. I mean, they don't allow. We monitor students in the classrooms, and so those activities are monitored by the teachers. And again, we value and trust our teachers' discretion there. We have to. We can't possibly. We as a district can't possibly monitor the internet, essentially. And we do have filters on everything that reduce any risk for both our teachers and our learners. But we don't have an exhaustive list, nor would I want to even try to create one of all the resources that our teachers are using.
But maybe acceptable ones or ones that we should not use. You had mentioned earlier $73 million of the county going out to cyber charter schools. My fear would be these type of things that offend other families that had reached out to me specifically about this is more money out of our pocket that will end up going to cyber charter schools because they will leave the district when we don't monitor things like this better. And I really think, especially considering BrainPop specifically, it should be something that we either have to vote on or have somebody overseeing and watching these type of things, because it was sickening to see some of the other videos that were out there. If you haven't seen it, I would tell you to take a half a day to just sign up for a free trial and look at them. They're really, really terrible.
Any comments from any of the other board members on this?
I guess just not specifically BrainPop because I have not taken time to explore it, but is there some process, procedure for taking things that we regularly accept as curriculum supplements and reviewing or monitoring them?
Yeah, there's a process for the most commonly used stuff, such as BrainPop. I think BrainPop was probably a recommendation of our elementary tech folks at one point. I mean, some of that's researched, not all of it is. So I guess what I'm saying is the most common forms of the things we use, it runs through the central office in forms of in fact, when we recommend curriculum, we list examples of items that can be found. But beyond that, there are, you know, teachers are going to pull in things. So yes, the most common stuff that we use is run through the system, so to speak. And BrainPop was and determined to be appropriate.
Is there an ongoing review, or is it just once it's in, it's good?
Well, the curriculum, there's a curriculum cycle, and so when that cycle kicks around, then the materials are updated and the resources are updated, and so they would be reviewed at that time. I mean, is that fair to say, Dr. Lord?
It is. We also, every year, look at what we've used, what programs we have, the usage of those programs by the teachers, and we do reach out to those teachers based on that usage, whether we should continue using and paying for the resources or whether we need to look for something else.
And there have been times when we've dropped different packages. For example, MyAccess, we're no longer using. Is that correct? Just because I'm aware. MyAccess was an English program that we used for a long time. Teachers gave us feedback that it wasn't meeting their needs, and so we stopped paying for it. We just dropped it. So there's an informal process that goes on a yearly basis, but there is a curriculum cycle that updates resources and materials.
I guess what I'm hearing, apologies. What I think you're asking is, like, once a digital piece of supplemental curriculum's being used, we don't audit it while it's being used. We either wait for the cycle to happen, and how often is the cycle, or how long is the cycle? And then, you know, with what Nadine said about the yearly, like, that's just based on if we're not using it, that gets kind of fleshed out. But, you know, with these digital resources, things, you can approve it next month, you know, or it's be introduced to the teachers next month, but then next year they're adding content that it might not align with what we approved as the organization changes. And I get it would be a nightmare to try to manage it. But is that possible, I guess?
Well, and that's where we go back to the first comment I made. It really is, it falls back on the teachers to make sure that they're monitoring that and that it fits, you know, it fits our overall objectives and community, et cetera. And you know, occasionally it happens where we have to talk to a teacher that has pushed a little too far one way or the other, and it happens. And typically the teacher goes, I didn't realize. It's just because this is how I think. And so, you know, occasionally we've got to do that. It's really important, and we remind teachers they really have to be neutral on so many of these political pieces as well as some of the social pieces that exist out there.
The other thing that struck me about this resource, and again, I haven't explored it, so I'm not making comments about the content necessarily, but does the school district pay for a subscription to that? So that would be, I think, the driver behind some of what I'm asking is, if the school is going to pay for the resource to be available, it's not just random content that the teacher has found on the internet, it's something that we have provided. And this resource is not specifically one that I'm questioning. I just am questioning maybe more the practice or procedure of, especially in the scenario where we are promoting or providing a specific resource, should there be some policy of more frequent review?
Right, and again, there is a process for that. For example, here's a really good example. So just prior to March 13th, last year, about 10 days beforehand, I pulled a small team together and said, I think there's a chance that we're going to go virtual. And I swore them to secrecy because I was hoping it was wrong. And we basically said, we're going to build a virtual platform in the next couple of days. And so they went out and they found a whole bunch of resources and vetted them and looked at them. And much to everyone's surprise, we were shut down on March 13th. And by that Monday, this school district was able to offer electronic services when many others were scrambling to do that. And they had vetted them, and they had gone through them, and they had said, yeah, this is an appropriate resource. So there are folks who do that in the district for the stuff that we recommend. And so there is a vetting process when we write programs or update programs, and we say, hey, suggest this resource, suggest this resource. So there is a process for that. But again, teachers have access because of the internet to a whole lot of other information.
I think then, I mean, with some of the new information, even just on the paying part of this and how this would go, I would like to make a motion to move that we suspend BrainPop usage from all curriculum until it can be reevaluated as a resource.
And I see it differently, Mr. Conroy. I don't think it's an inappropriate resource. In fact, I think it is very appropriate. And so I would not support your
Well, when you have signs that are out there that are specifically saying Black Lives Matter, My Life Matters, white silence is violence, and stop police violence in the specific image that's in that video, I would completely disagree and my motion stands.
It's been moved. Is there a second? Hearing none, the motion fails. Any other further comments?
Well, just one quick comment or question for you, Dr. Hollister, is you mentioned that we will talk to teachers if they're teaching something that we feel is too one way or the other. And so I guess the question I would have is there something set up, whether it's in orientation or when teachers first enter the district, where this is communicated to them proactively as opposed to reactively? Because I know at least two parents have contacted me concerned about some of the critical race theory and things that have been taught in the high school to some of our students, which I know is happening. And so I guess I'm wondering, is this something that the teachers have already been told and communicated to them, or is it more of a reactive thing?
Yeah, to be fair, I think it is probably more of a reactive thing. We count on our teacher preparation schools to make sure teachers understand that they have to hit down the middle of the road. As a member of the state's Commission for Standards and Practices, we talk about this occasionally. We had that meeting today, in fact. And so the whole moral code, so to speak, that teachers have, it's one of the few occupations in the world that actually have a moral turpitude code, and so they're very aware of that. And in fact, the commission, which I sit on at the state level, has asked colleges to actually add more of that content. So it is covered in the teacher preparation programs. If you're suggesting we should probably remind folks on orientation day, I think that's a reasonable.
Yeah, that'd be my recommendation, would be something like that, because I think we want to give people the benefit of the doubt that they have a moral code and center, but the reality is a lot of brilliant teachers don't. And so it might not be a bad idea just to,
guide them. We can certainly do that.
And I totally agree with Gary in that one, with everything, especially the times we live in, I've looked back when I ran for school board back in 1995, I emphasized that I wanted history is history, and we don't change what our history was in this country. I agree with a lot of things Brian said over here, but I think we ought to emphasize that to monitor and take into consideration what the mindset is in our community and what the facts are when it comes to a lot of these issues.
Any other further comments?
Can I just add that we do have a course that we give our new teachers on professional responsibility, and we also do spend a whole day on the technology that we have.
I don't know, sometimes, we worry about the new teachers, but, sometimes teachers, any of us, our thinking changes from when we started, from what age we were as we get older, too. So, it's across the board. I think it should be emphasized to no matter what their level of experience is in the district. All right. Any other further comments for the good of the board and the district?
question about sports.
All right, hearing none, do I have a motion to close the meeting?
So moved.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.